The dhow continued slicing through the waves on its way to the excavation site. Shafiq expected to drop anchor within the next 2 hours. That would put the time at shortly after 1 p.m. There would still be plenty of daylight hours to begin searching for the shipwreck. Seated in the small galley with her notebook computer, Anya read through the responses her request on the archaeology boards had prompted. Captain Shafiq's information on the subject of Kumari Kandam was limited to tall tales he'd grown up with. Anya had posted a question to find out how much information was readily available. Even though she'd researched the area where the Shakti excavation had been, she'd only targeted history and legends surrounding that culture. Kumari Kandam, as it turned out, was a whole new kettle of fish. There were a lot of postings, but not much offered anything significant until one got her attention.
I'll bet you're going to get a lot of responses to your question. Kumari Kandam is part of a conspiracy. See, there are a number of people, not me, who believe that lizard people lived in that time. Or maybe they're still living among us. Don't know if you're familiar with the Reptoid Conspiracy, a belief that if the meteor that brought about the Ice Age hadn't hit the Earth, the dominant species would have been reptilian, not mammalian. Some paleontologists believe the Troodon, a small bipedal dinosaur, was destined to become the dominant species instead of man. From the bone structure of recovered skeletons, paleontologists also believe that the Troodon's features were gradually changing. Their vision was definitely more binocular than any other dinosaur at the time, and they had partially opposable thumbs. Several of those bones have been found in Montana. Others were found in Eastern Europe and Western China, which definitely puts them in your neck of the woods. Some people also believe that the Reptoid Conspiracy can be attributed to alien DNA threaded into the dinosaur DNA.
Man, I'm glad Doug isn't reading this.
Anyway, thought you might like to know that. Post what you learn. Curious minds are waiting.
Anya tried to mentally sort through the material she'd been given and had turned up. She could only muse to herself, was she looking for a lost ship or a lost world?
Deploy the fish!
From the stern, Anya stood in the hot sun and watched as one of the crewmen picked up the fish. The side sonar drone looked like an old V-2 rocket, or maybe a spaceship from the 1950s science fiction pulp magazines. It was 3 feet long and had fins at the bottom. The crewman tossed the drone overboard. The Casablanca Moon crept along before the breeze. A side sonar scan couldn't be done effectively at speed. The towing cable that attached the drone to the side sonar terminal paid out as the device settled into the water. Buoyant, the drone floated on the surface and immediately trailed the dhow. A second hull-mounted side sonar unit was forward of the ship below the waterline. Lochata, seated under a canvas tarp Shafiq had ordered hung, stared at the terminal. The unit looked like Anya's notebook computer, but was thicker. The view screen glowed.
We have a signal!
Anya retreated back to the shelter of the tarp and felt the immediate change in temperature from the deck to the shade. The screen showed the computer-assisted representation of the seafloor. The black-and-white image looked a little grainy, but objects, large objects, could be made out easily.
Nervous, Anya?
A little.
You wouldn't be human if you weren't.
Good to know I'm human.
We're treasure hunting. Nothing makes a man feel more alive than that.
Not treasure hunting. Relic hunting.
Either way, the process is the same. It's us against the sea, and the sea doesn't like to give up her secrets.
I know.
You're sure about the GPS coordinates?
I am. I took them with my GPS locator last night and recorded them in my computer and journal.
Then it's just a matter of hurry up and wait. We'll run the search pattern here, then we go out farther to sea as we need to, or another place closer to shore. Wherever you think we might have the most luck.
The search pattern would be hard, tedious work. They had to constantly reverse the boat and bring her around to sail back and forth in parallel lines. When they'd covered a big enough area, all carefully charted using the GPS locator on board, they would sail back over the same area in perpendicular lines. Anya took one of the folding metal chairs from nearby and sat. She hated not having anything else to do. But sitting and waiting, gazing over Lochata's shoulder at the black and white imagery on the side sonar screen, was part of archaeology too.
Wait.
Anya pushed up from her chair and looked at the view screen. Whatever she'd thought she'd seen was gone.
That was fast. Did you see something?
I don't know. I thought I saw a shape there on the ocean floor.
Anya sat at the computer beside Lochata. The terminal posted real-time imagery, but it fed into an internal drive on the computer that allowed direct image transfer. External drives could be swapped out as needed. Anya brought up the images, then rewound the copied video loop. Suddenly, the image appeared on the screen. Everyone except Lochata looked at it. The professor concentrated on the newest images. On the computer screen, Anya froze the image and studied it. It looked bulbous against the light-colored sand of the seafloor.
I don't know. It could just be a brain core, perhaps even a rock. It would take some time to turn the boat around.
There's no need. What's the current depth?
100 feet.
I'll dive.
A few minutes later, Anya wore scuba gear and flippers. After checking over her gear, she sat on the railing. Paresh, an Indian diver who was the youngest member of the team, joined her. Shafiq had assigned the man to accompany her, and Anya didn't mind. The buddy system was the easiest way to avoid trouble underwater. Anya checked the GPS locator around her wrist, made certain her equipment bag containing a flashlight and underwater camera was attached, shot Shafiq a thumbs up, and took the shark stick one of the crew handed her. Paresh entered the water a few feet away from her. He slid neatly through the water and righted himself with a couple of practiced flipper movements. After swimming slowly through the area in a pattern that mimicked the one followed by the Casablanca moon, Anya found the bulbous shape she'd seen on the side sonar screen. She signaled to Paresh, then pointed. He nodded and signed that he would go down for a look. Anya tried to wave him off so she could go instead, but he ignored her and finned down. Irritated, but knowing that one of them had to stay up to keep lookout, she finned herself to a holding position 10 or 15 feet above the object. It wasn't brain coral. Anya knew that straight away, because the object was encrusted with concretion. Usually, but not always, concretions formed around iron objects. That wasn't good. The ship they were looking for wasn't going to have much iron on it. At least Paresh knew what he was doing. He swam around the object without touching it. Cracking the concretion underwater often resulted in a pall of black clouds pouring out of the break. Even though the concretion took place, so did the iron oxidation. A quick wave of his hands and movements of his flippers turned Paresh back to look up at Anya. He shrugged his shoulders and showed her his empty hands. Anya held up a finger. She finned toward the surface. Anya took a quick GPS reading and wrote it down on a waterproof pad that she carried in a watertight pouch wrapped around her left wrist. Then she took a visual sighting on the coastline about 300 yards away and sank into the water again. Paresh hadn't waited. He'd evidently decided to follow up on the same idea Anya had. He swam with loose, natural ease farther out to sea. They were beyond the edge of the pattern the Casablanca moon was following. A quick glance to Anya's right confirmed that the boat was turning around to take up a fresh tack.
Rogue Angel is continued on the next CD.